people are dogmatically grabbing a feeling or a thought and not leaving it with fear of their identity being questioned, because they identify their life and what they believe as being the same thing. They are not. We are, in the best instances, scientists, which do not have a set of beliefs, but have a meta belief of the fact that we have to get rid of our beliefs in order to be able to represent the world better. And I think that in the same way that I'm a libertarian myself, I believe in individual freedom and capitalism and free markets. I love that. But I could debate with a Marxist and find some common ground in the sense that we both want the same thing. He wants flourishing for the people he likes or he loves or humanity in general. And I want that also as well. So our objectives are the same. We only disagree in the ways to approach that. And if you find in the tree of knowledge of the hierarchy of your beliefs, at the root of it, there's always something common. And maybe you don't have to go so far. Maybe one of the branches are common and not the leaves. So you have to find something common. Do we both agree that free speech is the best way to approach a dialogue in which truth is found with a bigger probability? And he would say, no, I think that dogmatism is good because it furthers my agenda and my ideology. Okay, good. But do you want human flourishing? Do you care about the well-being defined in the most general possible way? And he would say, yes. And I think that dogmatism is good. And then you would go to show him how to maximize his objective. What he's doing is not appropriate. And actually the opposite for his objective is the thing that he should be doing. So even if we fundamentally disagree, not even in capitalism, not even in free speech, but we agree in that we are focusing in human flourishing. So there's multiple assumptions in my analysis of life, how I approach philosophy and the universe in general. And there has to be some overlap at some level of analysis. And if you find it, the closest overlap between you and I is the place from which we can build an argument. And between you and the fat person who is not taking seriously his life, you could go to the root and say, do you think a life should be lived well? And you would both say yes. And then, so how should we approach the living well? Maybe there are some things that are not good for that and some other things that are good.
I feel like there's a lot of overlap between how your mind works and mine, in the sense that we've both been able to notice a lot of bullshit that intuitively comes to our mind, to our lives. The status quo, the thing that is the default option, we've both been able, not in all the cases, but in some cases, we've been able to notice that there's things that are bullshit. And we were just talking right a moment before this conversation started about how complaining is useless, but it feels good in the moment. And that is the reason why people do it. And there's a distinction between what feels good and what is actually good or useful for your life and your purpose.
Yeah, you're right. Complaining is a very, very bad trait. If you are truly aligned with yourself, right? If you vibe at a high frequency, you read through people's bullshit. You literally know when they're lying to you, and even if they're complaining with intention to get something out of you. Like, for example, with my clients, they'll be like, oh, if they don't want to do something I'm asking to do, they'll give me an excuse and complain about a certain area or something that bothers them, muscular, right? And just to get out of it, of the task that I'm asking them to do. When you're fully aligned with yourself, you can tell that the person is just bullshitting you. But someone like me, actually, I believe so much in all the people I work with, everyone around me, in my social circle and family. And you just keep pushing, you know? You just keep pushing, pushing and pushing until they really kind of get enlightened too. But there's a fine line between that, because after a certain point, you're actually doing them a disadvantage. You're enabling them. You get what I'm saying?
You cannot just throw facts to the faces of people and expect them to react rationally.
No, I mean, they most of the time they don't even know what's going on. They have such low self-awareness that they don't even know exactly what they're talking about, what they're saying, because their subconscious doesn't know what's going on. Consciously, they're like, okay, this is what I'm going to say, and I just want to get out of this. But their subconscious is like, literally, they're just bitching out on themselves, right? And around, and on all the people that are around them, basically. Because then it'll let everyone fall down, even the people that look up to them. So if someone looks up to you and you just always go the easy way out, those people are going to be like, oh, you always do the easy way out, so I'm going to do it too.
Yeah, and that self-awareness you mentioned, I think, has a lot to do with mindfulness, or not just being aware of your environment, but also being aware of the things you're aware of, and having a meta-awareness, and allows you to realize that there's some awarenesses, if the plural can be used in this phrase, that are false. I'm aware of how attractive a donut feels to me. This is an example I've given in multiple occasions now, but it perfectly captures this situation and this phenomenon, which is that the sugar in the donut is attractive to me due to a maladaptive evolutionary trait. It made sense in our evolutionary heritage to be extremely attracted to all the things that have a high amount of sugar, like ripe fruit or whatever. And now that feature of having a lot of sugar is perceived by us as incredibly good for our well-being, when in our evolutionary heritage, the amount of sugar available to us was orders of magnitude lower than the amount we have now. And what I'm trying to go to with this is that if you just live, if you are just aware of your environment, you will love donuts. But detecting the pattern of not only what surrounds you, but also that something that surrounds you that is perceived by you as attractive is not in itself good. So what feels good and what is good are not always correlated. And noticing that has to go through separating yourself from the situation and realizing that there's some feelings which are fake. The feeling of attractiveness towards sugar or donuts is fake in the sense that that feeling is not maximizing my flourishing.
It's a fake dopamine rush. That's what I refer to it. Why is the donut attractive, right? If you take that example that you just laid out, society teaches you that. In this world, we live in a world of consumerism. And all this fake foods and all of that, it's very, very attractive. Or they make it very attractive to us. Now, if you look at this perspective, and if you develop a self-awareness of how you really feel and what energy you're vibing at, what frequency you're vibing at, you're going to realize that sugar, this artificial sugar, actually lowers your vibration and lowers your senses and everything around you, right? And it makes you tired. Even if you eat a carbohydrate at breakfast, you're actually going to crash in the afternoon. You're not going to feel as good as if you eat a protein breakfast. But society teaches you that breakfast is the most important meal of the day, when it actually isn't, because if you go back to ancient type of stuff and eating habits, you're going to see that intermittent fasting is the most powerful fucking thing, because you're in that fastest state and you gain more clarity. With more clarity, you gain more self-awareness, because your mind just vibrates at a different frequency. So right there, back to that point, it's consumerism, and people think it's good, and they pay a price in the long run, because everyone just here all around, they just think short term, what makes them feel good, instant gratification, instant validation, just what makes them feel good in that instant moment. And then in this world we live in, you have access to many, many things in an instant matter, and you don't even have to put in the work anymore. So you're not going out there like back in the day, people went and hunt their food. See what I'm saying? They would hunt towards the evening to then have dinner and then wake up in the morning, right, with sunrise and not have any food anymore, and literally just fast naturally to then later on again figure out what they're going to do and how they're going to go get food. And nowadays, you can just walk to Dunkin' Donuts, Starbucks, whatever it is, and just get whatever the hell you want to get instantly. And not even that. That goes even further than anything else, right? It starts with low self-awareness and triggered by not having any clarity and really not even putting in the work to actually gain awareness and seeing how fasting makes you feel and eating something that's artificial sugar or fake in terms of nutrients, how that makes you feel and how your body responds to that.
Yeah, so you are pointing towards the phenomenon that is that there's a trade-off between long-term and short-term. If you're maximizing your well-being in one time frame, you're not doing so in the other. And I think that's not the case when you're maximizing your long-term objectives for long enough, because you start developing a taste for doing the thing that's good for your life in the long term. This is something that has happened to me in my journey of self-improvement in the last 4 or 3 years, in which I've noticed how things that used to be extremely attractive to me have transitioned towards being less so, like a donut or barbecue with a lot of fat and bacon. Those things seem to me not as attractive or appealing as they used to do when I more often or even did consume them. And now that I do not at all, I notice the situation with much more clarity that you were mentioning, and I'm able to realize how the feeling is fake, and I'm noticing how in this plot, which is my life, there's some people or some things that are liars, or my interpretations of what their way of interacting with me is are wrong. I shouldn't be appreciating the existence of donut in an attractive way. I shouldn't be attracted to it. And that getting accustomed to not consuming it and modifying my gut brain connection, which is something that has been a lot of research on recently, has allowed me to not be so hijacked and dependent on the substances. And once you get that independence from substances, be it social media, drugs, any kind of food, any substance or in general, the independence from having to do something because your body requires so as a quick fix gives you an ability to pursue longer term time frames, which you wouldn't do so if you're constantly saying, oh, I need a cup of coffee or I need a cup of whiskey right now because I feel like I need my fix of alcohol. All those fixes that you have in your life, if you get rid of them through suffering a bit in the beginning and getting accustomed to the reduction in the consumption of that substance, is the thing that will allow you to have more clarity that you mentioned before, and in the long term, pursue bigger goals.
That's right. You said some interesting things. I'll fill in on that. Self-optimization is self-mastery, and self-mastery starts with self-honesty. So you got to be honest where you're at, and then you got to be honest with where you want to be. When you understand where you're at and where you want to be, you can actually take the actions to get from A to B, from where you're at to where you want to be. And those are then what I refer to daily non-negotiable habits. So you actually ask yourself, is this going to get me closer to where I want to be, or is this going to get me further from where I want to be, right? If you know, if you, for an example, know that the donut is not going to help you lose those 13, 15, 20 pounds that you have to lose, you shouldn't be eating it. Very simple. That goes then into other areas. Same thing, right? If you're trying to optimize other areas of your life, you should always ask yourself, should I be doing this or not? And then develop the habits that are going to get you closer to it, instead of doing the stuff that fucks you in the short term, because of getting there, and then in the long term with your health, even, especially if it's something like that, because then we're talking diabetes, et cetera, right? Most people don't understand that. They don't even have a plan. They don't even sit enough with themselves to understand where they at versus where they want to be. They have no clue. They have no vision. They just follow what society tells them. That's a huge issue right there, because they're not putting in the work. You mentioned something else I forgot now. Maybe you can fill me in.
Because there was levels of analysis at which I've realized that there's hints in certain directions which are wrong, like donuts, bacon.
I don't think there's anything wrong with bacon, actually. I'm cool with bacon. But yeah, artificial sugar with donuts and stuff like that, 100%. I do think that everything we possess, we already possess within, right? To unlock our full potential, you got to look within and not on the outside and see what's going on outside and what everyone else is doing.
How would you define potential? What is potential?
That's a very good question. The potential to create what you want to do, to the potential of creating your own life the way you want to live it, you know? Everyone has a talent, right? You have a gift. I have a gift. X, Y, and Z has a gift. But people don't understand their potential in terms of that gift. So they always at a sub-maximal level, most likely. And they don't reach a certain level because they don't even understand where they're at, how much they can do. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So that would be like, let's say there's a economical calculation that we can do in order to frame this problem in a more tangible way. There's a factory which is producing shoes, and there's a lot of alcoholics inside of the factory. So if we get rid of the alcoholics, the people who are working in the factory will be more able to get to the product and transform it into the output, which is the shoe. And that reduction in the things that are not contributing to the goal allows one to not spend energy in superfluous things like security, taking care of the alcoholics or providing them with alcohol or any kind of conflict that could occur between the workers and the alcoholics. This is a bizarre example, but it's analogous to our own bodies. Inside of us, there's good traits and bad traits. And if we do not control the bad ones, we will be devoting a lot of resources, time and energy to the pursuit of goals which are not maximizing the thing that we actually want, which is in this case the production of shoes. And if you want to maximize one metric, whatever is fueling all the other metrics is hindering this single objective. But it's not always the case, I think, because in a lot of instances, if you do not take care of all the variables that are necessary to perform at the highest level, like you need to be healthy mentally, physically, you need to have a good social relationships, you need to take care of a couple of levels of analysis in order to be able to perform at the highest level. And until you do not take care of all those variables, you have to devote enough resources to those so that your output will be maximal. This would be analogous to having enough supply of leather, let's say, to be able to produce shoes. We also need electricity. But could we devote less money and resources and time to the supply of electricity so that we could maximize the output? I don't think so, because electricity is necessary. So distinguishing the requirements and the superfluous things that we do is where wisdom comes. Making that distinction, the alcohol is not providing me a bigger production of shoes or satisfaction in life or meaning or whatever measure you want to put here. And the doing 30 pull-ups every day when I wake up is, or doing my meditation or whatever thing you can think of that's furthering your mental, physical, and social well-being, it are the things that should be preserved and optimized, but not the consumption of alcohol.
Yeah, that's right. It's alcohol, it's sugar, it's any type of vices that there is. Any type of when it comes to human potential, any type of vices, they will actually hinder you from really unlocking your true potential. Because they lower your frequency, they lower your vibration, right? So you're less productive. You feel like less because you feel like shit. And I always say those who don't reflect, they project. So when they're in social situations, social interactions, what they do is their low frequency, how they feel about themselves, they put that onto others because they're not even self-aware enough to understand that it starts within, that it starts with them, right? So they just feel like shit and they make everyone else around feel like shit, right? So human potential, yeah, it starts all across the board and you have to put in work all across the board. And that means hydration, nutrition, they go hand in hand. The physical aspect, right? Training, whatever the hell it is that you do. It can be the gym, it can be anything else. You can go on runs and stuff like that. And then also, you know, your environment. Are you getting enough sunlight exposure? Are you dealing with heat and cold because our weather changes? So you can't be reactive. You got to be responsive to your environment that you live in. And those multiple other stuff, right? Like you can meditate to balance yourself more out and stuff like that. But whatever works for you, actually, whatever works for you. There's a blueprint for everyone, and that blueprint is generalized. But then each one of us is an individual and does deal with stuff differently. Therefore, they can pivot and make their own life. And people should actually understand that they are in control of their own life. No one else but them. We are in control of our own life and we can literally just get the life that we want and create the life that we want with those daily non-negotiable habits and set standards, actually. By setting standards, you are going to live up to them. You're consistently going to make it happen. So you're going to be pushing harder in your business if you set the standard, for an example, that you don't want to fly economy class anymore. Or that you want to switch from a Toyota to a BMW, right? If you set that as a standard, you're going to make it happen. If it just remains a dream, it just remains a dream, and you're never going to rise up to that standard. And therefore, you're not going to be putting in the work that you should be putting in, and you're going to engage in more fuckery, going out, drinking, doing stuff like that, when you could actually use those days on the weekend to build a side hustle or just work a second job and make more money to then invest that money into the stuff that you want to have, right? It goes full circle, man. It's all across the board and it really literally goes full circle.
Exactly. And what you're mentioning is agency. There's a term that what agency means is the perception of an ability to act and change your environment or your life. And the intuition or the belief in the having of agency in itself creates a big part of agency. So a big part of having agency is believing that you have agency, because the people who do not have a good life are the people who believe that they cannot change anything. And there was a quote by, I don't know who now, but said, the most common way in which people lose their power is by believing they don't have any.
Yeah, it starts within. It starts within and it starts with your belief system. And that's what I said earlier. Once you align your thoughts, your belief system, and your action, you're actually going to get exactly what you want. But if you don't believe in it, like you said, because most people, they're like, well, I don't deserve a Bentley. I deserve a Toyota. Who says so? But that's their perception of themselves. You see what I'm saying? So yeah, again, it's the standard issue. And it is, like you said, it is. If they don't believe in themselves for having a better life, they're never going to get a better life. So if they don't believe that they can quit the drinking, that they can quit the artificial sugar with donuts, they're never going to be able to quit it.
Exactly.
They don't even want to do it because they don't even know how it makes them feel if they would quit it due to that self-awareness, lack of self-awareness that we mentioned earlier. And then they have no clue. So they have no self-awareness. They don't have the self-belief in them because their habits are all trash all across the board. They're never going to get to what they really want to get. Achieve that, what they want to achieve. Or like I said, unlock their full potential as a human being. But if you understand, you have full awareness of your mind and you understand your thoughts and how powerful they actually are. Like, if you look into manifestation and, you know, the law of attraction, law of vibration, how you vibrate. And if you then understand that a donut lowers your frequency and it alters your belief system, and your belief system can shift somewhere else, and you believe that you deserve more, you're going to start taking actions that going to give you more. It's very simple. They're going to give you more. And those non-negotiable daily actions, like going to jiu-jitsu for you, training for me, eating healthy, paying attention to the foods that make you bloated, that don't make you feel good, that make you crash, right, throughout the day, just eliminate them. Actually use the law of subtraction. A lot of people always ask me, well, what do you do? What do you do? Do I need to do more to get where I want to be? And I'm like, no, you do not. You actually got to do less. You have to do less. You don't have to do that much. You have to do less. Just check your habits and check yourself. And then it's, who do I want to be? And that's how you get where you want to get.
Exactly. This is a concept that Nassim Taleb, a famous author, talked about in his book, Antifragile. And in his saga of Inserto, he talked about...
Very good book. I read that book.
In multiple occasions, he mentions this, but he talks about the fact that in fragile systems, like our bodies, we need to subtract things in order to maximize performance. So it is via negativa that we become the best we can, and not by adding, because there's a baseline of well-being that we have, which can be hindered, but not increased. You cannot be better than what your body is able to do. There's no pill you can take to perform double. You can only perform at a certain level. Or maybe performance is a complex topic, but let's say how well you see. You cannot duplicate how well you see. The resolution of the images you see, of, you know, the cortical tissue, all those things have a solid bottleneck, which cannot be enhanced by any adding. You can only preserve it from being deteriorated. And stopping to consume sugar and its deleterious effect in vision or at any level of analysis that we can think of in our bodies is precisely what we have to do. So I agree with you in that most of what differentiates the top performers from the average or even from the people who are low average, there's a correlation there. As you go from low performance to high performance, there's a decrease in the amount of things that they do, and they focus more in the things that actually add value. And being able to notice what actually progresses you towards your goal and getting rid of 99.9% of the bullshit is what maximizes the performance. Because you cannot, let's say, there's no single pill that you can take and suddenly become 3 times more productive. It's about not wasting your productivity in other things.
They do less, but they do it better. And they're able to do it better because they're able to put the distractions to the side. We live in a world with a lot of distractions. And again, instant gratification, instant validation, where you can just swipe and you get whatever you want and you don't even have to put in the work. So, by most successful people, like you mentioned, right? They do less, but do it at a better level, at a higher level. And normal, the average human being, actually sees that as boring. Because repetition is boring to most people. Unless you fall in love with the process. And I refer to it as flow state. That's when you are not outcome-based. You have no actual goal in mind. You just fall in love with doing. You fall in love with the process. That's flow state. Focus. So you don't think about anything else. So your distractions, they're not even anywhere in sight for you. You have like a tunnel vision towards all of it. And that repetition, you fall in love with that repetition, and that repetition equals then mastery, right? And you become a master at it. And that's when you become very, very good. Like I said, like a master, right? Most people just jump and don't stick long enough with the stuff that they want to do because there is so much out there. So if they start jiu-jitsu, for an example, right? And they're like, fuck, I'm not progressing. I'm not getting to the blue belt soon enough. In their perception of what should be soon or how fast it should be. They then quit jiu-jitsu and go to taekwondo or kickboxing. Not understanding that if they would have stay in lane with jiu-jitsu a little longer and just drill it and drill it and drill it day in, day out, repetition, they would have actually gotten to that. But they start jiu-jitsu with the mind that they want to be a black belt. And that's not what is about it. You can't start with the outcome goal in your mind. Because even when you achieve it, what's next? Where are you going to go? You'll want more. You'll want to do any other stuff more consistently. You're going to look around. And then if you don't achieve it in the time frame that you actually give yourself, you're going to quit. You're not going to be sticking around with it.
In how should we approach acceptance or validation, either from the outside or from the inside? Because from what you mentioned now about jiu-jitsu, is there a process of getting negative feedback constantly by not surpassing your current belt leads people to detecting that activity as a waste of time. And that is the thing that leading people to getting rid of activity and doing something else, because they want some positive feedback. And going through the negative feedback on a consistent basis without caring about the output and just thinking in the input. I'm going to do 20 push-ups today. I don't care what happens. I don't care if I'm not feeling good or bad. This input is going to be put into it because I know that systematically, at a systemic level, if I do this consistently, if I always do this, the output will be better. But now, there's always going to be a moment of not wanting to do it. There's no point in the history of a smoker in which smoking the next cigarette is not attractive. You have to look at the system completely and realize that no cigarette is acceptable, because even if in every single instance of the time frame you're looking for, a cigarette is attractive, the cigarette in its entirety, in the collective of moments of your life, is not attractive because it deteriorates your life. So being able to abstract yourself from the situation and seeing that whole time frame and noticing things by what they are instead of what just focusing too much in the leaves makes you lose the perception of the whole forest. And you have to see the forest in order to see the patterns which are omnipresent, and then you can get rid of the smoking. But if you were only focusing in the moment, smoking would be worth it.
Yeah. That's right. You have to make a promise to yourself and never break that word. That's key. And then it's momentum. You literally create momentum. But we got to go back to where you are and where you want to be. So if you're a smoker and you want to quit smoking, with just that example that you just gave, you have to see yourself, think of yourself as an actor and see yourself not smoking. How you conduct yourself not smoking, how it is going around, being in social circles, not smoking. You literally have to see it. You have to visualize it. And then make that promise to yourself and never break it. You can't break it. If you break it, you let everyone else around you, you let them down. So basically, your weakness is their way out. Because if you're a dad that's smoking, and you have a kid, you have a son, what are you going to tell him? When he starts smoking, you're going to tell him, you can't smoke? Kids don't respond to what you tell them. They only see what you do. They see your habits. You can't tell nobody what to do. You got to show them. You have to enlighten them. So you have to come from a place that you want to be a better human being for anyone around you. Stick to that promise that you made to yourself and never go back. Never break that promise.
Isn't the promise analogous to having a longer time frame? Because if you commit to whatever you've said you will do, the time frame you're managing is longer than if you are constantly subject to your instant whim. And if you're not subject to the constant instant whim, you can build projects which do not require instant gratification, so that instead of building in chunks of 5 minutes, which will take you nowhere, because you will only go to the McDonald's and eat fast food, you start building in chunks of decades. And that actually builds something useful. But the building of chunks of decades requires moments of suck. Requires moments of negative feedback in which there's no expectation in the future or no guarantee of having the black belt. Let's say all the topics are related here. And not knowing when it will come or whether it will even come. That is what SAC feels like. Being in the grind, putting the hours, the training, not seeing any progress. It is precisely that moment of frustration, which is the thing that separates the people who accomplish from the ones that do not.
Yeah, you fall in love with the process. So the dad that's smoking, trying to quit smoking, he got to fall in love with becoming an actor that's not smoking, basically. that's the best way to put it. Like, he needs to create himself and see himself not smoking. And every day, not bitch out on it and be like, today I'm not smoking, right? I'm creating that man. I'm creating that man that my son needs and that my family and all the people around me need it. So yeah, it's a long-term goal, like you said, and it's a never-ending journey. You don't know when that's going to end. Like, you just got to keep going. There's no way out. That's why you got to love what you do. And you just got to keep doing.
In some games, the game is keeping the game. Like marriage. You cannot win marriage or a friendship. You cannot win at it. You can only perpetuate it. So the whole purpose of the interaction is to perpetuate the interaction. The whole purpose of playing, of doing jiu-jitsu, apart from the incredible benefits, psychological or physical, and your ability to defend yourself that you derive from the activity, is the doing of itself. The maintaining your health to a good enough level for as long as you can to be able to keep enjoying the craft of doing the jiu-jitsu.
It's a commitment, right? You know how they always say, your jiu-jitsu teachers, they're always going to say, oh, jiu-jitsu is a commitment. Because you commit to yourself, you commit to your dojo, you commit to your peers that you roll with. Because if they don't have anyone to roll with, they cannot get better too. It goes hand in hand. They help each other, right?
The self-perpetuating system.
Pretty much.
This reminds me of what happens in flirting. If you approach a woman, or a man in this case, and you talk to them in a way which shows a perception in yourself of inability of handling the relationship, that will be incredibly unattractive. A woman doesn't want a man who feels like the woman he's talking to is too much for him. And the way you signal that is by the way you approach the situation.
That's deep, man, but it actually starts within you, how you see yourself. It's how you see yourself, your own perception. That's how they're going to see you. Like, if you see yourself as a bad motherfucker, they're going to see you as a bad motherfucker. If you see yourself as a loser, little weak loser, they're going to see you as a weak loser. And it goes back to the self-belief system. So whatever's in your head, whatever your belief system is, your thoughts, you're going to put that out there. It's the frequency that you vibe on. And people see that. They see if you're confident, and they see if you're full of shit. Like I said, if you're aligned, they see the people that are aligned, they see through your bullshit. They see if your confidence is fake. They see if you're lying. They see if you just have ulterior motives, et cetera, because they vibing at a way higher frequency than the person that's coming onto them with that nonsense and bullshit.
And this phenomenon of detecting that the other person is not at a high enough mate value, resembled by the way they approach the interaction, doesn't only apply to flirting when a man approaches a woman or a woman approaches a man or any other combination. It also applies to business and friendship and any other kind of interaction you can think of. You want the person you're going to be dancing with, metaphorically, having an interaction with, or this, even this conversation, there, any interaction you can conceive of requires two people to be performing at a high enough level so that it is in some way satisfactory. In jiu-jitsu, for example, it will make sense to put me with a black belt because I'm new in this art. And unless the black belt has the objective of teaching me some ways of grappling, it wouldn't make sense for me to fight or to grapple with a black belt because the output is evident.
Yeah, but you ever heard of the law of exposure?
No, tell me more.
So let's say you're a white belt and you start rolling with a black belt. And yes, like you said, the black belt's objective is to teach you positions, right, in drilling. If you're exposed to drilling with him, there's a very high chance that you don't want to go back to drill with a white belt. Because he drills at a much higher level, right? You get more out of it. That's the law of exposure. Once you're exposed to a certain level, you don't want to go back because you accept that new standard. You're exposed to a new standard, to a higher level, and you want to. We don't know what that is. We just know the feeling of it. So you want that feeling. That goes across dating too, man. If you are approach a woman and she's a 10 out of 10, you're never going to go and you start dating her, right? You're never going to go to a 2 or 3 because you already had a 10 once. That's the law of exposure right there, man.
The hedonic treadmill. You get used to one thing and then your baseline is updated. And if you are exposed to something worse than what you are recently exposed to, you will feel bad. Like the addicts to cocaine who are used to a new amount of dosage so that when they are exposed to the previous dosage, it doesn't satisfy them because they are now used to the newer one.
Yeah, cocaine, yeah, that's a good example. They start taking on Friday evenings and Saturday evenings, right, when they go out, and then they like the feeling. Again, they like the feeling. It's nothing else, just the way it makes them feel, because that's what people know and that's what people go off of. And then they start taking on Sunday. Then it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So we already had like 4 days.
Out of seven.
Out of seven, correct. And then it becomes every day. And you do a lot of harm in the long run. Just by being hooked on a feeling that's not even real.
And how can you make a distinction between the feeling you get from the consumption of a substance which can be argued to be negative, and this can be applied to any substance. It can even be applied to caffeine. If you consume too much coffee, the feeling you get from the consumption of coffee, which is only taking you to the baseline because you are used to this new level, is in itself distinct from the feeling you get of a skepticism towards that feeling. Let me rephrase this better. There's two feelings. There's a feeling of satisfaction that you get when you consume the caffeine. And there's also another feeling which arises in your mind, a meta feeling that judges the other feeling. And it says, this feeling is bullshit. This feeling of satisfaction when you consume your next dose of the substance you like is bullshit in the sense that we have to get rid of this in a systemic level so that we prosper in other fields which are now being hindered by this activity. How do you distinguish and how do you allocate your resources accordingly? Because distinguishing between what feeling is good or right, representative of the world, and which is not, is a hard task. How do you even begin?
You go back to where you're at and where you want to be, and if it brings you closer to where you want to be. And I will say, if it controls you, it's most likely bad. If you got to be in control, you got to control it. And because we don't know the feeling of bad and good, we do not know the difference, really. Our subconscious mind doesn't know. This is why a lot of people that are in abusive relationships, they go back to an abusive partner because they're used to that feeling of abuse. They never been exposed to a loving partner. They just been exposed to the abuse, and that's the feeling they know. And people always go back To what they know.
To the familiar.
To what they're familiar. That's correct.
And that makes sense because what has been exposed to you on a familiar basis, what has built in you some patterns of recognition of I'm used to this, is most probably good enough so that you don't die. And evolutionarily, whatever you were exposed to in the past, if you did survive that past, which is the thing that has to occur in order to be able to judge your past, because you wouldn't judge it if you weren't alive, it makes sense that evolution designed systems of perceiving the past as something that has to be replicated, because only the people who survive are able to judge the past as desirable. So there's an incredible bias towards judging whatever happened in the past as better than it actually was. And we have to discount this bias. Because I live this feeling always when I think of my high school. It isn't as if my experience there was great or horrible. It wasn't very polarized. It was quite mediocre. But I have a lot of memories about the high school, and my perception of how well I was during those moments is edulcorated. I remember those memories as much better than they actually were. And I do a bit more of introspection, and I immediately realize that in those moments, I was counting how many months were left so that I got the fucking title and I could leave that school.
Because you didn't like it.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
You didn't want to be there. If you felt that way, you didn't want to be there, right? Because time is an illusion. If you would really want to be there and you enjoyed the process of being in high school, you would have not even known anymore how long it takes until you get the paper and the title and you out of school. You wouldn't even realize that. So you didn't really want to be there. But yeah.
But now I get that memory adulterated and I perceive those memories as really good. And I am sad that those things will never come back. And in some ways, that's true. There were things that were good, like the interactions I had with my classmates and all those things. But as a whole, in order to be able to aspire for higher things, you have to give up the previous thing. And even if the previous thing was good,
your new life is going to cost you your old life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. But if now, back then, you were feeling that way, and now you're actually thinking, oh, it was good, that means that your environment now is not the optimal one for you.
Or that your recognition of how optimal your environment is wrong. Because your environment right now could be considered to be better objectively, let's say, but you still want to go back to that abusive relationship because you miss your ex.
Well, you're not missing her, but you're missing the feeling. It's dopamine. It's fake dopamine. Because people are hooked onto the feeling. That's what I tell my clients. We show up for the feeling. We do not show up for how we're going to look. Because if you just show up for the feeling and you do this task that I ask you to do on a daily basis, the external is going to follow. Because you're building the internal and the external is going to follow. There's no chance that it's not going to transform as well. If you transform internally, you're going to transform on the external, 100%.
The mind and body are interconnected.
100%.
And if you change the way you think, you will change the way you behave. And the interesting thing is that the reverse is also true. If you change the way you behave, you will change the way you think.
Yeah, because it's your habits, right? And those habits translate into other areas, and you think differently. If you know that alcohol is not going to do you good, you're not going to drink it, and you're going to have a different perception of alcohol.
And how do you get that insight?
It starts with you and where you want to be. You have to make that commitment to yourself. There's no other way around. Like, you have to start within and really be very clear where you are at and where you want to go.
And what if the objective cannot be clearly defined? There's some variables which everyone desires, like financial affluence, or some kind of security so that you're not constantly preoccupied of where your next meal will come from, Another one would be health. You want to be healthy, and your family members, everyone around you, you want to be healthy and good financially and in a good relationship. You want to take care of the relationships so that they are not deteriorating and they are flourishing. And those three levels of analysis that I just pointed out, the health, the finance, and the relationships.
They're very broad right now.
Broad?
Yeah. They're very wide. Like, yeah. It's just a generalized type of thing.
I'm trying to generalize as much as I can. But those three variables, if you don't have one of them, your life is relatively miserable. And if you don't have two, your life is considerably miserable. And so I think that we have to take care of these three variables in a general way, as I just figure out or mentioned, because there's no alternative. You cannot have a life in which you are constantly trying to figure out where your next meal will come from, or you cannot have diabetes and be aspiring for something bigger. So that's the basis of everything, that the Maslow hierarchy.
Yeah, those three you mentioned, I refer to them as family, finance, and fitness.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the core. That really is the core. But you said, what if you can't define that vision? Right?
Mm-hmm.
That this is like the broad thing. Family, finance, fitness. You do have to sit down and you have to look at what you want to achieve. So what is it? Like if you're single, you want to have your own family, so you have to sit down and actually understand who is the right person for you and what would that right person for you look like. Financially, it can be a number, and fitness is just same thing. Maybe you have to lose 20 pounds, so you say, okay, I'm going to lose 20 pounds, right? But those goals within those three different areas, and all those three areas are connected, is a circle, right? Because if you lack in one, the other two, you're also going to be lacking. You're not going to unlock your true potential. So all three have to be, you have to be all across the board. You have to, in each area, really, really define your goal, your vision towards it. And what it is, that means in each area, 100% for you. That might be 5 million for you and 15 for me when we talk about financing. Really depends on where you're at and where you want to be. But you have to be very, very clear in each area what you want to achieve. If you are not clear, you're not going to get it. The universe only responds to when you're super clear and when you take action towards that. If you are not clear, you don't even know what action you have to take to get there. See what I'm saying?
Yeah. What if we focus on these three variables and we try to maximize them? Is there anything else you need in life apart from having a loving family, a really good financial situation, and being fit, you and your family? Is there something else you can aspire to in life?
No, I don't think so. Unless you just got to follow your purpose. But if you follow your purpose, all three are going to get aligned anyways. Because you can make money with your purpose?
Maybe not.
Most likely you can. Most likely you can. I'm a strong believer that you can.
But why would the production of value, as said by whatever is your purpose, no one would have a purpose of doing something which they consider to be valueless. The purpose, I think by definition, has to be something valuable. And if you're pursuing something valuable, why does it need to be aligned with what is remunerable, what can give you income? Because one analogy I can think of is selling a pill versus a training program. If I want to sell you a training program, which is the thing that's going to be effective at long-term physical fitness, you are not going to be as willing to pay for my service or product. But you would be as super willing to pay for the pill, because it would be an instant change, assuming that they could lead to the same outcome, which they cannot. But what I'm trying to point to here is that the benefits, the deepest then the benefits you can get in life, are analogous to the training and not to the pill. There's no instant
to the work. Yes,
exactly. You need it. There's a need for the grinding through the process, and without it, sorry, but there's no output. There's no positive output.
But look at what society is teaching us. Nowadays, kids get trophies in school for just participating. So people think that if they're just participating, if they're just showing up, that's already enough. They're not even putting any intention into it. They're not even giving 100%. So society is teaching everyone around that if you participate, if you just show up, it's already good enough.
In some way, that's true. We have to give the ability to do, in the sense that the reason why we tell our kids that the purpose of the game was not to win, but to participate, is not that winning is not important. It's much deeper than that. It's that if you treat others well, and you become a competent being of society, a competent member of society, people will want to play more games with you, and they will invite you. And it is through the process of playing many games that you will become the best at your craft or at whatever you are thinking.
Through repetition, yeah.
And if you do not treat others well, which would be in some ways needed to maximize short-term victory in a game, I can maybe get away with some fooling you in order to get away with some benefits instantaneous. But tomorrow you will not invite me to play again because you know that I fooled you. And if you take into account the whole time frame of a lifetime, treating others well is the most selfish thing you can do, because that's going to maximize your well-being. And so this is analogous to the short-term versus long-term and the zero-sum game versus positive-sum game mentality. If we are just trying to maximize the next 5 minutes of well-being, probably fooling your family and your friends would be the appropriate measure. But if you have a longer time frame, you're going to take care of them. You're going to love them because you do not want to be alone and miserable. And taking care of them will be the thing that makes them take care of you. And that's what you need in order to be able to flourish, have a community of people that loves you, and you have to love back in order to be able to get some love.
To get, you got to give.
Yeah.
Everything is in motion. The universe is in motion. To make money, you got to spend money. You can't just hold on to the money that you make. You're going to lose it eventually. So same thing, if you want love from your family or from your partner, you have to love them. You have to love every single human being. If you're hating on them, people are going to be hating on you. Life is a mirror, it's not a window. So what you put in there, what you give, is that what's going to get back. You know? Again, if you feel good, you're going to be sending out good in this world. You're just going to ascend good. You don't want to do any bad. But if you feel bad, then again, you vibrate on a lower frequency and you just do bad all across.
And why do people play stupid zero-sum games instead of focusing in the positive-sum games of cooperation? Why is that even a phenomenon on our human psyche of falling for the stupid game of zero-sum game in which my win is your lose and your lose and my lose is your win? There's politics is one of them. In politics, if one wins, the other doesn't. There's some trade-offs which can be done in order to have a net positive, but ultimately, business, for example, is the opposite of politics, as I see it. Business is a field in which you can win and I can win. You produce a product which is valuable. I pay for it. I win because I get a product I like and you get the money you wanted. We both win. There's also a competition and things that can lead towards the elimination of the less competent entities in the market, which is something that is necessary to be able to have a functioning market. But the existence of negative feedback doesn't point towards the existence of positive sum games. The reason why we're much more prosperous than our ancestors is that we have been able to play games that are positive sum. If we were constantly playing for status, which is a zero-sum game, if I have status, you don't have it. And if you have it, I don't have it. Those relative games are not absolute. And the ones that are absolute are the ones fueling our prosperity, and they are the ones that differentiate our lifestyle from that of our ancestors 10,000 years ago. Their lives were brutish, short, and miserable. And ours are long, flourishing, and beautiful in many instances, or in most of the instances.
You ever heard of karmic debt?
No, I have not.
It's basically when you do some bad, you pay with time.
Oh, karmic debt.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
You pay with time. Because your thoughts are always going to go back, because you know you did something bad, right? So your thoughts are going to go back to, why did I do that? And you're going to have a certain feeling like, oh. And that takes away time from you actually being productive and doing the right thing, being in flow state. That stuff is real. Why do people do it? I really don't know. I think when it comes to politics, they're just trying to divide people, trying to spread hate, because they capitalize off of that.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of money to be made. Why do people, like general population people, average human being does that? I don't know. I think because they don't feel good about themselves and they vibrate at a lower frequency, and jealousy and shame and guilt, those are one of the lowest ones in that hierarchy. And they simply don't know better. And I also not exposed to how others make them feel good and what makes them feel good, and they don't know any other feeling.
Couldn't all those vices and stupid behaviors that we humans indulge in be reduced to the phenomenon I mentioned before about feelings that fool us? The feeling of attractiveness towards a donut is not analogous to the feeling of attractiveness towards a book. The book is going to add value to my life in a way that the donut is not. And distinguishing those two is the insight that we need to be able to do the judgment. And this is precisely when what you were mentioning too, with the polarizing of people and capitalizing out of it. The thing that feels good for you, the more power and prosperity in your instance, comes with a collateral of having less well-being and flourishing for other people, because you're playing a zero-sum game. And realizing that what you're doing is destructive, not at the level of you, but at the level of a society, should nudge the social policy in the direction of internalizing costs and benefits. If you are producing a cost for someone else, you should pay for it. It wouldn't make sense for me to be in the street with a bat destroying mirrors of the cars, and no one asking me to repair those cars. If no one did so, if I didn't go to jail for doing vandalism, the incentives wouldn't exist to behave properly. So there has to be an alignment between what you produce and what you get in order to maximize what people give of positive and minimize the what people give in terms of negative.
Yeah, there's almost no real consequence to anything of that, right? Like, if the consequence of like eating donuts is diabetes, you get fat and you diabetic, right? But then the pharmaceutical industry already has a solution to that. Just pop a pill and you'll be fine. You see what I'm saying? So no one really is like, okay, I don't have to put in any work. I can just, if I am diabetic, I can just pop a pill and I'll be fine. So why should I give up eating donuts? I love donuts. Why should I give them up? That's the decisive, right? There's no differentiation and there's no consequences to it. But if there would be actual consequences, fat people would fucking pay more taxes in this world. Trust me, they wouldn't eat any donuts. And if there wouldn't be a pill and they would have to hit the treadmill in the gym to lose the weight, to drop the diabetes, I'm positive they wouldn't eat any donuts anymore because they don't want to put in the work. Yeah. It comes down to that. No one wants to put in the work. It's fucking mediocre. Everything is mediocre. People became so weak. It's so mediocre. The standard nowadays, the average is so mediocre. It's actually so, so easy to become better than anyone else. They make it easy for you because they have shitty habits all across the board.
And how can you... When you're discussing with a fat person that he likes donuts, or this applies to anything. I was discussing this with my friend about the fact that he likes beer. It's not as if he's extremely...
Lowers your estrogen... Hires your estrogen, lowers his testosterone. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible. But I was discussing with him about the fact that he shouldn't take beer because in the long term it's bad. And he said, no, but they like beer. And I was like, you're missing the point. I'm not talking of the fact that you like beer. You like beer. I'm not discussing that. I'm discussing the fact that you shouldn't like beer and you shouldn't take the beer. There's a distinction between what is and what should be, and that is what I'm pointing to, and you're not being able to see the point. Because what you're focusing in is whether you like the beer or not. I'm not attacking to that level of analysis. I'm attacking to a superior one. The is and the should be. And what should be is your non-consumption of beer, even if it feels good, the consumption. Because in the long term, there are many things that feel good that are not actually good. So no, I'm not doubting the fact that you like beer. That's evident. In the same way that I could like beer if I tried it. I do not doubt it, or cocaine, or any, there's my neurotransmitters, my biology doesn't work differently as that of other people. It's the same principles. So if I took cocaine, I would like it. I'm not doubting the fact that the cocaine addict likes the cocaine. I'm doubting the fact that he should consume it.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Most of them don't understand that. Like you said, he misses the point of, like, it's not about does he like it or not. The point is it good for him or is it not good for him? And the fact is very, very clear. It's not good. Long-term effects are terrible. Maybe, and I believe maybe sometimes you just have to explain it in a more scientific way, right? So you got to say, hey, it lowers your testosterone, and do you know what that does to you? And just try and educate them. It's time-consuming, I understand. It takes a lot of energy from you because you're like, fuck, how the hell don't you know that? Like, you're so good in one field, and why are you messing up in another field, right? So you're not all across the board. You're actually not successful because you're only good in one area, and other areas you're slacking. But I believe that that's the only way. That's the only way to kind of get it out there and show that to them.
I think the way of doing this would require finding common ground. And I think I was discussing with you recently about the cancel culture and about how people are dogmatically grabbing a feeling or a thought and not leaving it with fear of their identity being questioned because they identify their life and what they believe as being the same thing. And they are not. We are, in the best instances, scientists, which do not have a set of beliefs, but have a meta-belief of the fact that we have to get rid of our beliefs in order to be able to represent the world better. And I think that in the same way that I'm a libertarian myself, I believe in individual freedom and capitalism and free markets, I love that. But I could debate with a Marxist and find some common ground in the sense that we both want the same thing. He wants flourishing for the people he likes or he loves, or humanity in general, and I want that also as well. So our objectives are the same. We only disagree in the ways to approach that. And if you find in the tree of knowledge, of the hierarchy of your beliefs, at the root of it, there's always something common. And maybe you don't have to go so far. Maybe one of the branches are common and not the leaves. So you have to find something common. Do we both agree that free speech is the best way to approach a dialogue in which truth is found with a bigger probability? And he would say, no, I think that dogmatism is good because it furthers my agenda and my ideology. Okay, good. But do you want human flourishing? Do you care about the well-being defined in the most general possible way? And he would say, yes. And I think that dogmatism is good. And then you would go to show him how to maximize his objective. What he's doing is not appropriate. And actually the opposite for his objective is the thing that he should be doing. So even if we fundamentally disagree, not even in capitalism, not even in free speech, but we agree in that we are focusing in human flourishing. So there's multiple assumptions in my analysis of life, how I approach philosophy and the universe in general. And there has to be some overlap at some level of analysis. And if you find it, the closest overlap between you and I is the place from which we can build an argument. And between you and the fat person who is not taking seriously his life, you could go to the root and say, do you think a life should be lived well? And you would both say yes. And then, so how should we approach the living well? Maybe there are some things that are not good for that and some other things that are good. So how do we distinguish? It would be a cosmic coincidence, a miracle, that all the things we do are perfectly aligned with how well our lives are. And that hasn't happened. That cosmic miracle hasn't happened. There's some things which hinder us. And recognizing that would convince, I believe, everyone that taking care of yourself, advocating for freedom of speech, capitalism, and all the assumptions I did is the correct way of approaching it. And even if you don't agree in capitalism, you could agree in the approach to freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is necessary. And I think that we can find some common ground always, and from that build.
It's hard to do that because people have different standards.
What do you mean by standard?
When it comes to health, right? They're like, oh, well, single-digit body fat is not my standard. I'm happy with 15 or 20% body fat. I don't associate healthy with 7% body fat. You see what I'm saying? At that point, it's a different standard, and it's hard. It's hard to find a common ground there.
You have to go one step back in the hierarchy and say, why is your standard set there? What is it that leads to that? Because in that response, we will disagree. And that's where, previous to that, there's the overlap.
Well, these people are exposed to different areas and different people that think alike. So if someone like you comes across that doesn't agree with that, or that has a higher standard, right? They don't even know any of that. They don't even know what that is. They have no clue. So again, cancel culture is very dangerous because there is not even a conversation anymore. It's just like, well, you're saying 7% and I'm saying 20%. Go fuck you. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. I'm not going to be friends with you anymore. I believe that if someone like that, and a lot of those people, you know, there's something within, they get triggered. They get triggered. And again, they're not self-aware and they don't know why it's triggering them. But I do think that subconsciously, they would love to have that 7% body fat. They just don't want to do the work to get there. So it's easier for them to try and block you out and cancel you. And be so like,
it feels good.
Probably it feels good to them. Because then they can live their mediocre life the way they already do. The way they've been doing, right? They don't have to change anything. Change is hard, man. Real change starts within, and real and stuff that starts within is hard. It's daily work, and everyone has to put in that work. People don't want to do that nowadays. It's easier for them to cancel you and be like, I'm not friends with you. Because it's easy to find new friends, right?
There's more things that occur at simultaneously. For example, the mechanics that occur not only individually, but collectively. If I'm part of the same group as you are, and I show an ability to deal with opposite ideas in a rational manner, you're going to put to question how unconditionally attached I am to our common ideas. And that leads to a mechanism of purge internally, of who is sacredly respecting our ideas and who is not. And if you are rationally considering all the landscape of ideas, you're not blindly following one set of ideas. And that is the thing that all the dogmatic movements in history have done, from Nazism to Maoism to the Soviet Union, to current feminism, to anti-racism, to all the ecologism, whatever thing that you can think of, even religion.
That's dictatorship, man. If you don't follow, then we're going to get rid of you, right?
There's an alternative, and that alternative is the scientific method. If you disagree with me, that's good, because we can now find who is right. Because the alternative is horrible. Not finding out what is right makes us live in a suboptimal world. And it is understanding that potentiates improvement, not hard-headedly and dogmatically assuming that what you were given when you were born is the correct thing. You have to be adaptive.
100%. There is no right or wrong. It's perspective.
Is that statement in itself right?
I think so. I think so. There's no right or wrong. What's right for you might be wrong for me, and vice versa. What then? What then?
But wouldn't you agree that there's some patterns that transcend you or I, in the sense that if you do exercise, you're fit, and if you eat donut and don't do exercise, you are not fit. Isn't that statement in itself true?
As a generalized thing, yeah, it is.
Okay, so yeah. There's something we can build from.
Yeah, science. We can build on that, but then, like I said, then if we dig deeper into it, it's going to be like, well, I don't know if 7% body fat is healthy. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because someone else is going to say, like, no, 7% is way too, you don't have enough fat, right? And then someone else is going to be like, no, that's healthy.
Yeah.
It's perspective.
Yeah, but the exact location of the bullseye is not going to be specified. But the general location in comparison to other general locations can be specified.
Yes, 100%.
If you have 100% body fat, you're just a blob of fat.
You're fat as fuck. I don't even know what the fuck you're doing at that point. But yeah, you're right. Yes. There's a generalized type of thing that you know. Yes. If your BMI is over 24, you're fat. You're considered fat nowadays. That's correct.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to see is that there are some patterns of logic which transcends our situation. And the Stoics, the Buddhists, there's a lot of really insightful people in the past who have been talking about this. All the great philosophers have been talking about some threads of logic which transcended their situation and they now apply to mine. And it will, in the future, apply to whoever is listening to this or whoever is living in the universe. So I'm trying to point to some logical steps that we can understand and apply in a way to optimize our living. You don't have to understand the universe fully if you understand a trajectory and extrapolate from that.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, just like the bare minimum of standards, basically. That's what you're talking about right now. The bare minimum of standards. Yeah, all across the board. If people... I can give you another example with myself, right? I say to my clients, if you just apply 30% of what I do, you're going to become about 1% better a month. 1% better a month is 12% a year. Over the course of 5 years, that compounds into a lot, right? 60%. That's above average right there. If you apply 60%, then double it. You're going to be there in 2.5 years. So you can kind of, you have that in your control, how fast you want to go towards where you want to be, right? But yeah, obviously, those generalized standards, they are out there. People like us, they set the standard very high. And if someone can't do it to 100% the way we're doing it, they should try at least a little bit just to get better.
Trying is worth it, even if you fail, because the alternative is failing even more.
Well, if you don't try, you don't even know if you would have failed or not.
Exactly.
That's even worse. You're already dying. Like, at that point, you're just existing. You don't even know what you're doing. Why are you even here?
You're a pre-skeleton.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. You're not living. What the hell are you doing? I mean, that even goes with people that have a 9-to-5. As I always say, people that have a 9-to-5, they have no purpose. They don't even know why they wake up in the morning. Their only motivation is a paycheck. And you know what the sad part about that is? They don't even get paid enough for the work that they actually do.
Nassim Taleb said that opioids and a monthly check are the two most addictive substances, and people should get away of them as if it was the plague.
100%. They just keep you mediocre. Like, you're not doing anything. You're just comfortable with what you're doing, and you're not doing anything to do more. Because you don't have to. You're just collecting that check, and you're like, okay, fuck it. That's all I do.
And doesn't this apply to relationships in the sense that the person who is going to fuck up your life the most is not the bad partner or the good partner. It's the one who is good enough.
It's all across the board, man. That applies to work, to relationships, all across the board. And when it comes to relationships, if you can't break that cycle, you're just going to keep passing that on. You're going to pass that on to the next relationship. And even if you get married there and you have kids, you're then going to pass it on to your kids. You're going to pass it on to your friends, et cetera, et cetera. All across the board. If you do that, you're just fucking everything up.
There was a quote I'm trying to rehearse now. It was incredibly poetic. It was something like, alcoholism and abuse are something inherited across generations. If your father is an abuser and takes alcohol, the son has a high probability of doing so, and the grandson also. So they're across generations, the bad habits are perpetuated. And alcoholism, or any bad habit we can think of, is like a fire which spreads across generations until one has the courage to face the fire instead of running away from it. Because if you run away from it, fire will keep moving. The only way to stop it is fighting it, and you have to face it. So you have to build the courage to do so.
Yeah, that's a very good, very good analogy right there. You explained that nicely. Staying poor is a choice too. If your parents are poor, you're more likely to be poor, right? And then if you don't break that cycle, your kids are going to be poor. You're always going to be like, it just goes from generation to generation. It's just passed down. Someone needs to break that cycle. And I believe that that's their greatest purpose. That's the greatest gift of each individual. If they can break that cycle and they can teach others on how to do it as well and what worked for them and pass exactly that to others, that's the biggest purpose of someone.